The first Chinese people to arrive in California landed in San Francisco in 1848, the same year that gold was discovered at Sutter's Mill. Today, San Francisco's Chinatown remains one of the country's favorite tourist attractions, but less is known about the early Chinese prospectors who lived as far inland as Idaho in communities that vanished nearly a century ago. In his latest book, Christopher Corbett traces the life of Polly Bemis, a frontier woman whose improbable journey took her from a village in China to a remote Idaho backwater. In the process, he reveals the little-known role the Chinese played in the development of the Old West. His book, The Poker Bride, The First Chinese in the West, is published by Atlantic Monthly Press, and I'm very pleased it has brought Christopher Corbett back to our show. Hi.
Hi. Thanks very much.
I know I asked you this question the last time you were here to talk about a book on the Pony Express, but you teach journalism at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, not the first place that I would associate with someone who writes about the Wild
West. That's true. Actually, and I'm from Maine, so I'm about as far from the West as you can be, but the West appeals to me. I think the West is a kind of imaginary place in the American psyche. Americans love the West, and they love the West whether what they love about the West is true or not. They say when you cross the Missouri River, the stories just start to get bigger.
Well, we could see how the attitudes change just by looking at the movies about the West, where in the early days the cowboys were all heroes, and then in more recent Westerns, the few that are made these days, we're always the bad guys, and it's the people we are discriminating against are the heroes. And this actually fits in with that to some degree.
I think that's true. I found the memory of the Chinese in the West before I found Polly Bemis, the Poker Bride. And I was actually in Nevada, where I spent a lot of time researching the Pony Express book. And I used to walk in the cemeteries there, and there are fabulous cemeteries where people from all over the world are buried there. That people came from everywhere to get rich. And some did, but most didn't, and some wound up buried there. And I asked this old lady where the Chinese cemetery was, and she said, well, there is no Chinese cemetery. The bone collectors came, took them all back to China. I didn't know the Chinese repatriated their dead. And I think that was what made me curious about the Chinese in the West.
I can't imagine that there was a lot of source material about Polly Bemis. How were you able to learn so much about her?
Well, there actually is a fair bit about Polly at the end of her life. What makes Polly an interesting person is Twain says someplace or other that we ought not write about mankind, but write about a man. And Polly is that person. She entered the West in July of 1872, and she died in 1933. So her life is the arc of the Chinese experience in the West. The thing about her that it helps to tell the story is that there were people who actually interviewed her and talked to her at the end of her life. And a lot of what we have to do in constructing the beginning of her life is to look at people who wrote about the Chinese in the West.
And a wide range of people became interested in her story. Why her in particular?
She was the exception to the rule. She survived an experience that should have killed her. To give you some idea, when she was an old lady, she told an interviewer, Sissy Patterson, who was a famous journalist, you may remember her, she said, my family sold me. They were starving during a famine. And she went into some detail about that, and she survived that experience. She was sold for a lot of money. She was sold as a concubine, which was very common.
Now, what's the difference between a concubine and a prostitute?
Yeah, well, she was bought by a particular buyer, and this was fairly common. She was bought for what was a lot of money. She was bought for $2,500 as a figure that's often quoted. And to give you some perspective, $5 a week was a laborer's wages in 1872. So she was brought as a valuable thing, like a racehorse.
By a rich Chinese person?
By a rich Chinese in Idaho. And she came from China into San Francisco, from San Francisco up to Portland, Oregon, from Portland, Oregon to Lewiston, Idaho, and then on the back of a pack horse over the mountains to a place where she would live for 60 years.
Sister Alfreda Eisenson
was
a major source for you.
Yes.
Why was she so interested in the Chinese people of Idaho?
Well, she was an old nun who was a native of central Idaho, and she's a fabulous character because you wouldn't expect an elderly nun to be interested in particular the life of a Chinese concubine. But the Chinese were still a presence in Idaho when Sister Alfreda was young, and I think she was fascinated by them. She became a kind of a collector of Chinese memorabilia.
Are they no longer a presence? Is there no Chinatown in Boise?
No, there's no Chinatown in Boise. No. There's no Chinatowns in most of those places now, which is an interesting sort of thing. The Chinatown was iconic in the American West. There wasn't a fly-blown place from Winnemucca to any small town like Eureka that didn't have a Chinatown, but pretty much those places dried up.
You say that the California Gold Rush was one of the greatest migrations in human history.
Yes.
How large was it? Well, we're not just talking about Chinese.
No, we're talking about lots of people. Well, to give you some perspective, in 1846, you'll often hear this figure quoted, there were said to be 290 white men, which is how they counted people, living in Northern California. In 1860, 14 years later, when the Pony Express began, there were 500,000 people on the Pacific slope. It was a massive migration of people. The thing that Americans are often amazed about is that the word of the gold rush reached Hong Kong before it reached Boston, which is astounding. And the Chinese wasted no time in coming to California, which they call Golden Mountain.
I'd always thought that the Chinese came here to work on the railroads.
Well, they would come eventually to work on the railroads, but if you think about it, the railroads didn't really get rolling until after the Civil War, the late 1860s.
So the Chinese came to work on the Gold Mountain, which is the name they had for the United States.
Right.
Were the people, the non-Chinese, hostile to them?
Well, initially the Chinese were a curiosity in America. Before James Marshall found gold on the American River, most Americans, and New York City in particular, if they had seen a Chinese person, and they called them Chinaman, that you see that word across the literature well into the 20th century.
Which many Chinese people, at least more recently, have found offensive.
Yes, today it seems wildly archaic to us. I'm not certain because I'm not sure that the people at the time cared much for their feelings one way or the other. But most Americans, if they'd seen a Chinese person, had seen Chang and Eng, the Siamese twins, who were ethnically Chinese, or they'd seen Chinese people in what they would be freak shows. Barnum put them on. You could watch people eat with chopsticks or use an abacus. So that's what the Chinese represented to Americans, a curiosity. And when there weren't very many of them, they were a curiosity.
And two other names of the Chinese were Celestials and Coolies.
Yes.
One seems a little nicer than the other.
Yeah, correct. And they weren't technically Coolies. Most people who came here, most of the immigrants in the Gold Rush time were from the Pearl River Delta in the south coast of China, and they paid their own way. They came on what they call the credit ticket system, and they would come. They might borrow some money to do it, but they might sell the water buffalo and pawn their mother's jewelry. That's a particular example, and they would come to California.
To get rich?
Well, in the hopes of getting rich.
But was it so bad where they were in the Pearl River,
yes,
which seems to still have a positive image in the minds of many Chinese? You go through New York's Chinatown, you see the Pearl River shop, the Pearl River this, the Pearl River that.
Well, at the time, wars, famine, floods, lots of other problems were inducements to travel.
And were the Chinese the Asians most likely to come?
Yes, right. Japan was pretty much a closed world at that time.
Did they leave any written records behind?
Not a great deal. And one of the interesting things about writing about the Chinese in the American West is, and in the Library of Congress has even lamented this, there is a lack of primary resource material. And part of that is that most of the folks who came here in the early days were simply peasants who came to work. They didn't write books.
But you do mention an English-Chinese phrasebook that was published in 1875.
Yes.
With some pretty disturbing phrases.
Pretty
like,
disturbing.
He was murdered by a thief. That was something you put
in
a phrasebook. Not good morning,
pretty
how
disturbing.
Are you?
Yes, it's not exactly Berlitz, is it? No, it's pretty grim. I think things like that give you some idea of what it was like to be Chinese on the frontier.
Now, I'm assuming that most of the people who came were men in search of money and glory.
Right, probably 90-something percent male.
So were women mostly sent over the way Polly Bemis was?
Yes.
What was her name?
We don't know her real name. We don't know her real name, and we know she was illiterate. She took the name Polly Bemis because she would eventually marry a celebrated character in central Idaho named Charlie Bemis, who was a Connecticut Yankee gambler. He was a bit of a deadbeat. His friends said he never lifted anything heavier than a deck of cards. But they would eventually marry and live together until the early 1920s, which was unheard of at that time.
The book is called The Poker Bride. It's written by Christopher Corbett, and I'm assuming that a card player could play for a bride.
Well, the story of how Charlie won Polly in a poker game is one of those beloved bits of Idaho folklore. Now, there are people who swear this happened, and then there are people who say, no, that's been much exaggerated and so forth. But you have to go back to Polly's talking about her origins. Polly was worth something to somebody, and she did not change hands lightly. Someone thought of her simply as a thing of value.
Well, the six companies were involved in bringing her over.
Right.
Who were they? They weren't the Tongs, were they?
No. Well, there were various Chinese benevolent associations in San Francisco. They largely spoke for the Chinese in the American West before the Chinese government had really established diplomatic relations with the United States. But when you came here from China in those days, you were affiliated with some sort of organization that represented wherever you were from in China. And it was a bit like belonging to the, if you were Irish, to the Tipperary Association. So they were the kinds of people who would repatriate your body if you died.
And you said that she was bought for $2,500,
yes.
A lot of money.
Yes.
Why would she have been worth that much in China? And why was she worth that much, considering the fact that she was illiterate?
Sure. Well, in China, and there's lots of records on this, you could buy a girl for $50. She would be worth $200 when you got her to Hong Kong. She'd be worth $500 in San Francisco. The further she moved into the frontier, where she was valuable because she was a concubine, or in some cases a prostitute, and I don't believe Polly was ever a prostitute.
But there were a fair number of women brought over as prostitutes because it was such a male society.
It was.
And very much cut off from the rest of the world.
Yes. They called it in the West a bachelor society. And, I mean, various people like Mark Twain talk about men riding distances to see a woman, just to look at a woman.
Something similar happened right here in New York's Chinatown for many years until immigration laws were changed.
Right.
So what happened with her with the man who bought her?
Well, she shows up in the records as living with Charlie as early as 1880 in the census. So it would appear that she wound up in Charlie's life relatively early on. One of the things about Polly's life in the West that allow her to live until 1933 is she never wound up in a brothel. She would have had a short life if she'd been in a brothel. Brothels in the American West were not colorful places. They were violent, they were dangerous, and there are plenty of accounts in my book of what happened to girls who wound up in places like that. They call them the cribs.
There's that famous line in Roman Polanski's film, Chinatown. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Yes, yeah.
Which was automatically thought of as something dangerous.
Yes, exactly. Well, again, it comes back to the Chang and Eng thing. The Chinese were regarded as mysterious and exotic and somehow different than everybody else.
Did Chinese men in America find success as minors? Did some of them become rich as prospectors?
There were people in the early days who did well for themselves, but largely there were enormous numbers of these guys who simply performed manual labor for long periods of time. The book ends, and I thought this was sort of interesting, poking around records in the West, is in the 1920s and the 1930s, elderly Chinese miners would wander down out of the mountains in places like Idaho. They'd been scratching the ground for gold for 50 and 60 years, and they wanted to go home to China. So I think they're probably a pretty good example of somebody who didn't get rich.
But they also took a lot of odd jobs. You quote an author at the time, G.B. Densmore, who says, a man who should undertake to live without contributing to the employment of the Chinese would have a hard time of it.
That's correct. They did enormous numbers of things. One of the things that Americans have a hard time understanding is that in China, the Chinese men did not do the laundry. But there wasn't a town in the American West without a Chinese laundry.
How much of, Chinese looked different than other people, but they also were not Christians.
Correct.
And so they were often called the heathen Chinese.
Yes, the heathen Chinese.
Or as Bret Hart wrote a poem called the heathen Chinese.
Yes. They were regarded as very exotic. They did, however, have one great defender. He's in the book. The first American to speak on behalf of the Chinese was Mark Twain, which I think is a terrific thing, because if you think he's speaking as a voice for the voiceless and for the defenseless, and he says in Roughing It, which is a funny book, he stops the action of Roughing It, and he says to the reader, "But I saw the Chinese in the West, and what we have done to them is shameful." So they weren't without defenders, but defenders were rare.
In the legend of the Poker Bride, where Charlie Bemis wins her in a poker match, would she have been considered his mistress, just his property, or would she have been thought of his future wife?
Well, I think he must have thought of her as his future wife from the very get-go, because he eventually married her. And one of the reasons that he married her, and this is in the book, and this is not myth, is Charlie survived a bushwhacking. A disgruntled gambler shot him, and he would have died, but he didn't. And Polly appears to have saved his life, and he married her after that. He married her to keep her from being deported.
Well, before there were problems in Arizona, there were people who considered the Chinese to be a problem all around the world.
They did.
The country.
They did.
And
right.
They were the subject of the only real discriminatory immigration laws.
Right. We forget that.
Why?
I don't know.
A special hatred toward the Chinese?
I think there was in some places in the West. One of the things that I think Americans today are often surprised to find is that there never was a significant number of Chinese in the West. There was no yellow peril. To give you an example, at the end of the American Civil War, there were 6.5 million black Americans. And at tops, there were about 130,000 Chinese on the Pacific slope. So figure that, you know.
You mentioned all those bones that were sent back.
Yes.
Many Chinese people were determined not to even die in this country. But
right.
Polly didn't seem to mind. Why do you think that was? Did she become assimilated, do you think?
Well, perhaps in a fashion she did. Women like Polly were treated differently than men were. In fact, women's bones were not repatriated. And Polly had survived a strange and violent experience. She was an enormously popular and romantic figure in Idaho in the 1920s and 30s. In fact, when she appeared in the Idaho county seat of Grangeville, coming down on the back of a horse in 1923, 50 years after she'd gone up into the mountains, the newspapers could not restrain themselves with the references to Rip Van Winkle. It was extraordinary. She was a kind of a celebrated character.
She had been in Warrens, Idaho.
She had, yes, which is pretty much still an end-of-the-road place, unpaved
road. You've been there?
Yes, I have. It's the end of the line.
And what would people be doing there now?
Well, there's only a half dozen people living there now, but as there are in so many of these back end-of-the-road places in Idaho, there are people who, you know, dreams of gold die hard.
But what about Charlie Bemis? You said he never wanted to work. What was he doing up
well,
there?
Well, initially, Charlie had some mining interests, but he had a lot of other things going for him. He owned a saloon, and he was a very well-known gambler, though he appears to have been a gentleman of leisure the last decade or more of his life. His wife did all the work. In fact, that was part of their story.
Well, they moved out of Warrens
because
people were unhappy with their living arrangement, with the fact that he'd married her?
I don't know so much that, except that I think because Charlie had survived this shooting, they wanted to live someplace that was quiet. They lived on the banks of the Salmon River, which people call the River of No Return. This is the river that turned back the Lewis and Clark expedition. So they lived there where they were. People visited them all the time, but Polly did all the work. She was a fabled gardener and fisherman and various other things. Charlie just played cribbage and talked.
Well, you have lots of pictures in the book, but no pictures of her.
There are pictures of her at the end.
Oh, wow. I missed that.
No, that's quite all right. There are some pictures of her. The photographs we have of Polly are of her in middle age and when she was elderly.
Yeah, here's a picture of her leading horses at
the
Bemis Ranch.
Yeah.
Well, Christopher Corbett will be giving a talk tonight at 6:30 at the Museum of the Chinese in America. That's at 215 Center Street between Howard and Grand Streets. His book, The Poker Bride, The First Chinese in the West, it is published by Atlantic Monthly Press. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you. Thanks.